from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee.
Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Wow. Hi, Hino.
I have a little
doing?
Bit of energy tonight.
You do. That's always so nice. Oh, boy. Okay. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. Oh, boy. Get ready, folks. My name is Scott.
And I'm Hino. Yes. Yes, I am. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City, figure out how things work.
That's right. Now, we don't have any answers. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are, but we are able to find the right people, very, very smart, brilliant people, and bring them into the studio, talented people. Bring them in and pick their brains and answer your questions.
That is very true, and we need you to go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow, and you can chime in with your questions and comments there, or on Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow, and the conversation is starting right now.
I know I'm getting on right now. Not quite now.
We have other things for you to do right now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let you know that, you know, and I know everybody's talking about it. The whole town's agog. Dish subscribers, you can now watch us on TV because of the Blue Highways TV channel has now been picked up by Dish.
That's right. You can watch us 4 times a week on channel 73 all over the U.S. And the part we're most excited about is that we can actually watch ourselves here in Nashville now. Actually, that's not.
I don't
that
have
exciting.
Dish.
Yeah, that's but, good.
But it's just nice that it's here. I'm very excited about that.
That is true. Well, listen, because you can see things like this show tonight is going to be on eventually. We have a big show tonight. We welcome back hit songwriter, author, and blogger, and songwriting coach Brent Baxter right here in the first hour.
That's right. Then we're going to be talking with hit songwriter, recording artist, and American Idol contestant Paul McDonald in hour two.
That is so true.
Okay, well, let's get to it. Brent's being very patient. Please introduce him and let's stop with our shenanigans.
All right. Well, if you've ever wanted to meet a man whose goal in life is to help you become a pro songwriter, you're in luck because that's who we got with us tonight. He's a hit songwriter, coach, songwriting coach, and author of the Man vs. Row blog, which is all about songwriting. He's had his songs recorded. Brent Baxter, by the way, is his name.
Thank you.
He's had his songs recorded by Alan Jackson, Monday Morning Church, which is a nice big hit
big,
for him.
Big song.
Yeah. Lainey Adebellum, Randy Travis, Joe Nichols, Lone Star, Ray Stevens, which is just, something to put on your resume right there. That's awesome.
I'm very proud of that one.
And a big number one in Canada for Gord Bamford with a single that won the CCMA Single of the Year, When Your Lips Are So Close, and a whole bunch of other songs. He's a longtime friend of the show, and we're just thrilled to be able to say, Brent Baxter, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
It is great to have you back, and we need to talk about this free ebook that you have available to your blog subscribers. That is really an awesome resource. It's Think Like a Pro Songwriter, and the concept, honestly, we've been doing the show. It's almost our 8-year anniversary.
Yeah,
by the way,
Hino,
be ready to buy me something.
I'm expecting something.
The concept has just kind of sunk in for me in the last few months that there really is a completely different mindset from a songwriter, and this town is full of songwriters. Right. And a pro songwriter, isn't there?
I think so, and I think I'm still learning it, to be honest. I think it's always kind of evolving. But yeah, I put together this free ebook that's not just for the blog readers, it's for anybody that wants to go and download it. So it's free for everybody that wants it.
Well, how do they do that?
It's online at www.giftfrombrent.com. You can get it right there.
Spell that right, because I did Gift from Brett, and it's a whole different thing.
Yeah,
you don't want to go there.
I don't want to know.
Wow. No. Get,
yeah, I mean, I got to go shower my brain later on, right. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Gift from Brent.
From Brent, B-R-E-N-T. Or you can also get it at manversusrow.com.
Okay.
Either one will get you there.
Okay. So you say you're just kind of learning it as well then.
Right. I mean, I've been in town 13 years now. I got my first cut it was 2004, so about 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And still, it's a learning process because the business changes and, you know, and hey, I know how to write songs, but there's this whole other ball game, this whole other side of it that no one really teaches you. And you know, you talk to other songwriters, and I've been blessed to write with, you know, people, songwriters that are in the Hall of Fame and other hit writers and people that had a lot more success than me. But, you know, you try to kind of start picking up on things and see guys that you admire, what they're doing, and you know, friends of yours and stuff that you've learned from your own mistakes, and just start trying to. And that was a lot of what Man vs. Row is just trying to capture those lessons and say, mm-hmm. okay, almost a letter to myself, you know, several years ago, like, what do I wish somebody had told me? And what do I want to keep in the front of my mind as I operate and go about, you know, the music business? What do I want to keep in the front of my mind? Because it's easy to forget and just start thinking like a songwriter, because right. that's what I've been most of my life. Versus how to be a pro songwriter. And those are two different things.
We should probably let people know that they can look back on our podcasts.
That's
and
right.
find our earlier interview with Brent, where we talked about his career and him coming to town and all that.
That's true.
Because we're skipping all of that tonight.
Yeah, because we've talked about that before, and that's all out there. You can go to themusicrowshow.com and listen to that.
Yeah, because we're digging in tonight.
That's right. Well, you've had lots of years of doing coaching, but your years at NSAI mm-hmm. and, of course, now with Man vs. Row.
Right.
Just, you know, so people can get an idea. What, can you point to any success stories of people you've worked with that have gone on to have some success?
Yeah, it was fun. I was at NSAI doing one of the pro teacher nights. It was earlier this year. And, you know, we're taking questions, and this gentleman raised his hand, and he was like, hey, I just want you to know that, you know, years ago at NSAI, we did a one-on-one session, and you gave me some feedback on this song, suggested some changes, and I went and made some changes, and then, you know, took it back to NSAI and some more changes or whatever, and it just got cut by this, you know, like an independent artist. And
nice.
And he goes, it was my first cut, and just want to say thank you. I was like,
that's great.
That's really
that's
cool.
Awesome.
I was like, you got to send me a copy of it because I want to hear it and take 50%. No.
I got to see what changes were made.
Yeah, suggestions are free.
Let me see.
But it made me feel really good, because a lot of times, you know, with a blog, you just put information out there and right. you're hoping people are picking up on things, and you don't really maybe see the results. Of course, songwriting is one of those things where you can be getting better and better and really helping people, and it doesn't always translate into cuts. But that was cool to hear that. And I've had some other people that I know follow the blog, and I've done coaching sessions with and workshops with that have mm-hmm. started to get some, you know, cuts here and there. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to take all credit for that or by any means. But,
sure.
you know, hopefully you it's a, yeah, I should.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, really?
They don't know if I take all credit.
They're not listening.
No. So their names are.
Yeah. In fact, I wrote all those songs for them. Yeah.
And that's just part of the coaching. but it's cool to see that people making progress, and you're like, okay, good. Hopefully I'm a small part of their journey and helping them think in ways that are going to be helpful.
And then you said, well, you're welcome, Jeffrey Steele.
Right.
And yes. Dylan Dixon and Dean Dillon.
Right.
So, so you said something, you wrote something kind of interesting in this Think Like a Pro that it's my job to write money-making songs.
Yes.
And I think that's interesting because we hear all the time, you know, oh, the songs, those songwriters, there's nothing good on the radio. And you know, the songwriters are writing what's paying their mortgage.
Yes.
And that's a whole different
what's
mindset.
What's being cut. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, in a way, it's like, yeah, we all have our opinions about what's on the radio. And I think there's some great stuff, and there's some stuff that, if it were just me sitting in a room, I wouldn't be interested in writing.
Sure.
Right. Okay. But I can respect that because, you know, those guys are great writers. Those mm-hmm. guys and those girls are great writers. And they're doing their job, which is, my job is to write hits. That's how I feed my family. That's how I get to keep doing this and why these doors stay open. So it's like, I mean, they're not the ones deciding what gets cut.
It's right. not that they're right. not amazing.
Right.
You know,
and they can write other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You hear
but
some
right now the market wants
stuff.
Trucks and stuff, so that's what they're going
like,
to write.
Well, I can write what I want to write and watch it not get cut, or I can write what they want to cut, and then they cut it, and then, okay, and then I get to write other stuff, too.
Right,
right.
You know, that feeds me, and then I maybe write this stuff that feeds my family, and maybe they love that stuff, too. I don't know. You know, but I think there's a difference. If you want to be, I think there are two kind of ways of being a pro. I think you turn pro long before you start making money. I think in your mind, you turn pro.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the side of it. If you want to actually do it professionally, that's someone that makes money doing it. You know, how much money? Well, I don't know. That's up for debate. But,
right.
you know, they're pros because they aim at a target and right. they hit it. That's success. And I got to respect that.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, other than that, I mean, what are some other things, let's say three or four things that writers should do or pay attention to if they want to bone up their skills and get better?
I think one thing is thinking about, like, if you're pitching songs, you know, there's one, there are different sides of it. You know, there's four major parts of successful songwriting, I think, if you want to be a pro, is writing, recording, accessing, and pitching. So writing, of course, we all know what that is. That's the fun part. That's what drew us in.
Right.
Recording is not my forte. I'm not a musician. I'm not, you know, all that stuff. But you got to get it in a form where people can hear it and understand it communicates what you want to communicate with the song.
Right.
And then access, you got to get it to somebody that can say yes. Like, yes, I want to record it. Yes, I want to put this on my record. Yes, I'll play it for the next person up the food chain. Whatever
yes,
that
I never
is.
Want to hear from you again.
Yes, right.
Right.
But you got to get to that person.
Right, right.
Otherwise, hey. And then the last part is you actually have to pitch it. It's not right. enough for me to be friends with an A&R person or with the artist if I don't ever say, here's my song. Why don't you listen to it, see if you like it. So those four things you got to do. And part of it is just thinking about all those four cornerstones and giving them each attention and mm-hmm. not neglecting any part of it, because it's like a chair. If it's just on three, you know, you're going to wobble
right.
and your career is not going to be stable and you're going to be really relying on a lot of other people. So I think that's a thing. And I have an acronym for that. It's RAP, W-R-A-P, write, mm-hmm. record, access, pitch. And for a long time, I thought it was just W-R-A-P, meaning write, record, and pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started making more sense to me. No, I got to access these people, because who am I going to pitch to? I got to get closer to I call it the big yes. Because there are mm-hmm. a lot of people you can play songs for, pitch songs to, but they can't give you the big yes. They can give you a little no, and you got to go around them to get to, or they can give you a little yes, I'll play it for the next person at the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
But that person who really makes a decision on a project, that's the big yes, and that's the person I'm trying to get to. So I think that's one thing successful pros think about, is trying to identify that. Like, who is that person that really makes a decision on this record? You know, I was right. talking to one of my co-writers the other night. And we were like, oh, this song's good for blank artist, and like, okay, well, let's, you know, okay, oh, we can demo it this way for this artist because they like this kind of stuff. I was like, but we're like, wait, okay, who actually makes a decision on what gets on the record? Okay, we need to demo this so the producer will like it
right.
and get it to the producer, because the producer really has the final say on what goes on this artist's records and that kind of stuff. And that kind
that's interesting you should say that. So mm-hmm. talk about that a little bit. What would be the difference? I mean, if the producer is producing that artist, mm-hmm. chances are they like that sound and they like that. How could it be different?
Well, I think this particular artist, like, oh, they like this kind of more maybe Red Dirt stuff. That's probably what they're listening to in the truck back home, the Red Dirt country mm-hmm. kind of mm-hmm. stuff.
Right, right.
But the records are a lot more slick. So, you know, first thought was like, oh, let's demo more Red Dirt, kind of that, you know, acoustic-y, kind of raw.
Okay.
I'm like, wait a second. Okay. But really the person we got to get turned on to this song is producer Y. And we got to make sure that producer really hears it. So let's, and he likes stuff slick. So let's produce it more slick, like the record's going to be, and not worry about what the artist is going to love as much. Because if the producer gets on board, hey, the producer gets to be a hero, marches in, hey, this is your next hit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish I knew a lot more of that stuff. I was getting this information from my co-writer who's known this artist, has gotten cuts on this mm-hmm. artist. And it's that kind of thought process, instead of like, oh, I like it, I'm just going to go demo it. How are you going to demo it? How I want to. You know, mm-hmm. is cool and works at times, you know. But if you know you're writing a song targeted for an artist, you want to know that stuff. And I think a lot of the pros know that. I don't know that in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. you know. But I think part of it is, you know, you're talking to your songwriter friends, you're talking to anyone you know in the business, trying to get that kind of insider information, going, okay, who really makes the decisions on this? Who's the big yes? Who do we have to get this to if you really want to get a cut?
When we come back, I want to touch on, I think, on people that might try to skip that step, the mm-hmm. access step. And let's talk about that when we get back. We'd like to remind our listeners that this segment was brought to you by the fine people at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That's right. Scott and I have been driving Toyotas for a long time. My wife and I both have one. And we actually love that dealership. Toyota of Cool Springs is a great place to go. We go there to get our cars serviced. And, you know, when it comes time to buy a new one, that's where we're going to be going, because everything they do is just so... The customer service there is just awesome.
Yeah, they do it.
It's very comfortable.
They do a great job, and their service department's killer, too. Go see George. He's the owner. He's going to take great care of you. And find him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Man vs. Rose, Brent Baxter, here on the Music Row Show.
left your Bible on the dresser, so I put it in the drawer. 'Cause I can't seem to talk to God without yelling anymore. When I sit at your piano, I can almost hear those hymns. The keys are just collecting dust, but I can't close the lid. You left my heart as empty as a Monday morning church.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Monday Morning Church. Big old top five hit for Alan Jackson and for our guest here this hour, Brent Baxter, who is a co-writer on that song.
That's a great song.
That's a great song, yeah.
I'm about the only person that hears that song and feels happy.
So everybody else gets really depressed.
Everybody else is sad. I'm like, woohoo. Yeah.
We were talking about pitching your own stuff and access, and I just came across somebody who had just done a couple demos, was relatively new in town, was like, okay, so I'm going to, who should I pitch this to? And who would this be? Who can I pitch this? Who can you get me? Who can pitch? And he's very, very new. Mm-hmm. And so there are no relationships. So, I mean, what comes first, pitching or relationship building?
Well, I think, you know, the story of a cut is usually the story of relationships. Mm-hmm. Like if you trace a song from writer's room to the CD or digital download or whatever, iTunes or the radio station, it's a story of relationships. Yeah, I wrote it with so-and-so, and we gave it to so-and-so who gave it to so-and-so who played it for so-and-so, and they cut it. It's really a story of relationships. It's, mm-hmm. I threw it out the window, and it hit Joe Nichols in the head.
Right.
No, it's always some, and it may not be strong best friend relationships, but it's some sort of relationship with a, like Monday Morning Church was, I had the relationship with Aaron Enderlin, my co-writer on it. So got to know her. We wrote it. She had a relationship with Jeff Carlton, she was working with Publishing Wise. Mm-hmm. He had a relationship with Keith, the producer, who obviously had the relationship with Alan.
Right.
So boom, boom, boom. It's through relationships.
Right.
Right.
So okay. Yeah, I think it matters big time, because otherwise, who are you going to pitch it to? You might drop it off at a label somewhere.
But that's not really pitching a song.
Dropping off is just sort of dropping off the edge of the earth.
Right.
It's really, because it.
You might as well put it in the trash can yourself.
Right.
You know, it's just got to save the step, you know.
Exactly. I just brought you an empty CD case just so you could use it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Your chair looks a little wobbly. Let me help you with that.
Yeah, level that out for you. Yeah, because it's just a so, you know, small percentage that it's just going to find its way like that.
Right.
So you got to start getting relationships, or get relationships with people that have relationships.
And yeah.
Right.
It's a patient game.
Does self-pitching make people uncomfortable if you're out there pitching your own songs? Because, you know, they might be saying no to you as opposed to a surrogate.
I think it varies. I think some people like it because they like to know where the song's coming from. They like to know the writer.
Right.
I think it's important to do. And that's something I cover in Think Like a Pro Songwriter. I give a list of like, hey, here are all the reasons songwriters need to be pitching their own songs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, because I've had cuts through stuff I've pitched myself and putting myself out there. And I think one of the advantages, if you're blessed to get, well, one thing, if you don't have a publisher, who else is going to pitch your stuff?
Right.
Maybe
right.
Your co-writers. But, you know, I know for myself, I'm going to be more likely to write and want to write with somebody who's pitching their own stuff because my team just got bigger.
Right.
Oh, you're pitching your stuff? You have relationships? I'm more likely to write with you versus someone that doesn't have those relationships because the song just has a better chance.
There's also a benefit, I would think, in hearing the no's too, and you mm-hmm. start saying, okay, these kind of songs are getting people to at least want to move it up the ladder, whereas these songs are getting turned off halfway through the chorus.
Right. I noticed that I hear my songs differently when I play them for like an A&R person or producer than I do if I'm playing them for my publisher even, or co-writers or friends or whatever. Those little things that you are like, eh, not a big deal, they seem massive when you're in the room. You know, those little things that you just kind of gloss over, like it's good enough. You get in the room with somebody who really can press stop or can go, let me send this to Blake Shelton or whoever. Those little things are magnified. You start hearing things differently. And yeah, like you said, you start figuring out what kind of works and what doesn't. And on the front end of demoing, which is something I cover in the book too, is, you know, should I demo this song? Like, you know, from experience going and playing these songs for people, what's getting good response and what's not. You start thinking, okay, am I really going to pitch this song?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. So do I really need to demo it? Maybe I should demo a different thing instead, or write one of the type of songs I really would pitch.
Right.
Right.
Or just do a guitar vocal type of work tape.
Right.
I mean, that was one of the things that we've heard. We had, who was it that was on? Luke Laird was on a few months back, and he didn't really, he doesn't really demo anything.
Anything
it's
Luke's,
all work tapes.
Anything Luke said that contradicts what I say, go for Luke. So, just throwing that out there right
well,
now.
Luke's a track guy. I mean, there's some,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
some drum
but
track.
But still, I mean, he played us some of his demos, and we're like, really? That's awesome, you know, because yeah. obviously it was very scaled back and it
but
wasn't
it's probably funky and different, has its yeah. own thing.
But it wasn't a big, huge, you know, 8-9 musicians, mm-hmm. you know, playing on a song. So yeah. I guess who knows?
Yeah, which Crickets that Joe Nichols cut was two guitars, Kevin Denny singing,
okay.
and cricket sounds. That was it. That's that what was we it. Pitched.
Now, were the Crickets in the Union or?
We don't talk about that anymore.
Okay.
They got uppity and they got on the end of a hook.
I hate that.
Catfish mouth.
Fishing.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I'm reading the pro mindset, the how to think like a pro, which by the way you can go to giftfrombrent.com or manversusrow.com for this. And I was thinking some of it, this is kind of a weird question, but something that makes me crazy is when like a hot 20 something or early 30s actress who's like an A-list actress.
What kind of crazy are we talking about?
Well, hold on.
All right.
Work with me. Let me get through it.
All right.
Has a baby, and then 3 weeks later, she's in a bathing suit, and they're all like, oh, she's bounced back. And then she's like, oh, it's really not that hard. You just need to eat right and feel good. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, you have a cook and a nanny and a trainer. And
you're pretty professionally. Like, that's your job.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. it's a whole different thing than folks. So I'm thinking, right. how do you handle think like a pro? How do you handle that pro mindset when you're like – the majority of us in town that also have a full-time job
right.
and are work, you know, are feeding a family too. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance that?
I think it's in the time that you're able to spend. Mm-hmm. It's what you choose to spend time on. It's how you choose to think about writing, trying to think longer term and also being patient and so on. So yeah, if you're writing just nights and weekends or whatever, and you're sitting down to write and you're looking at your list of ideas going, okay, what do I want to write today? Well, you know, if your goal is to get cuts or whatever and be like a professional songwriter, then you start looking through your list of ideas with that in mind and not just writing the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Because, oh, that looks like a hoot. Yeah, I'll write that. But it's something that's never going to go up the ladder, never going to get cut or anything.
My entire catalog.
And most of mine. So it's thinking about that and going, okay, no, okay, this is my long-term goal. So I'm going to look at these ideas and go, what do I feel like is the most marketable that is going to move me in the direction of my dreams? Because I don't have much time.
Right.
So I need to be focused and goal-oriented with this. So I think even if you don't have all the, you know, 40 hours a week or whatever to devote to songwriting, which almost nobody does, even professional writers,
right?
Then it's where you choose to spend your time and the ideas you choose to write, who you choose to write those songs with as best you can, and just how you conduct yourself. I mean, and I've said this on Man vs. Row before, it's not your first cut that makes you a pro. It's your work ethic that makes you a pro, and cuts are sometimes
yeah.
the result. You know, whatever box you have to work in, I'm going to operate like a pro during that time that I have available.
Okay. I gotcha.
I like that. Well, Scott and I were laughing about demo players, musicians, mm-hmm. the other day. We were talking about, you know, there's some great players out there.
Oh, yeah.
But pretty much every time you finish demoing a song, they all say, oh, hey, great song, man. That was
great
awesome.
Great song, man.
Oh,
great song,
that.
Man.
That's really cool. Don't get too excited about that, right? I mean, because sometimes some people who are new to town will think, oh, my God, I got a great song.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because it's a nice thing to say, and you just paid them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they yeah. do that for a living, so they probably want to get paid to do it again.
They want to get right. paid again.
So
yeah.
what's the advantage of going, wow, oh. really glad that's over. That last note felt so good. That's probably not in their long-term interest. Because, you know, what if it does get to be a hit? You
yeah.
Because crazy stuff happens or whatever. There's just no advantage to them
yeah.
sometimes being brutally honest,
but from
it's not their job.
On the flip side, though, that's also good advice, I think, for the songwriter. Don't go in there asking for
validation,
right.
opinions, and you know, because you're just putting them in a weird position, you know. Because you know,
yeah.
no, really, what did you think of my song? It's like,
ask me three more times, and you'll never see me again. Even if you try to hire me, it's
yeah.
not worth.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah,
I called a player that helped me with my first demos.
Right.
This weekend.
Did you apologize?
And apologize to him because I was thinking, gosh, I actually did that. I actually called him the next day and said, hey, now that you've thought about those songs, what did you think? And so, I called and apologized. He got a big kick out of that.
That's awesome.
Then he said, lose my phone number.
Yeah, don't ever call me
again.
Lose it again.
Right. Yeah. I have already changed my number three times. It's getting expensive.
You have said patience three or four times in the last segment here. Is there a fine line between patience and just being lazy? And how can you tell?
Yes, there is a difference. You don't want to be passive. You want to be actively patient. You want to keep working in the time you have available, whatever that is. Lunch break, before your kids get up, whatever that is. And you want to bust your tail and work hard at it because it's hard and it's very competitive. It's the stuff that's out of your control that you just have to be patient about. Stuff you can't control anyway. The stuff that you can control, don't really be patient about. Like, go and write.
Okay.
You should be in a hurry to do that without blowing up your family or losing your job and all that stuff, right? But it takes time to build relationships. It takes time for people to start trusting you and like, oh, this person consistently writes really good songs. Okay. It just takes a while, whether you want it to or not. And it never happens fast enough. I mean, you know, I was blessed to have that Alan Jackson thing 2 years after I moved to town.
That's
amazing.
And so
within the first 3 years, I had a song on the radio, which is just nuts.
So you're thinking,
this is easy. Everybody can do this.
Yeah. Right. I don't really see what the big deal is, really. But there's still a lot of patience after that. Like, I didn't get to skip those steps of getting, you know, not getting cuts and then, you know, getting a cut. But, oh, it's a bonus track. Or getting a cut. Oh, it won't come out for another 2 years.
Talk about bonus track. What does that mean?
It means it looks better on the bio than it does on the bank statement is what it means. I've had several. And I'm glad to have them. I mean, you know, both of my Lady Antebellum songs were bonus tracks. So I wrote with the band before, well, actually while they were negotiating their deal with Capitol Records, and I wrote two songs with the band and two songs with Hillary. And out of those four songs, they cut two of them.
That's cool.
I was like,
pretty good.
Sweet. I love these people. And, but then both of them end up not making the record. Right. So they were out there. Like one was, one's called A Woman Scorned, and you got it as a free download if you pre-ordered the first record. And then the second one was a bonus track, like iTunes Europe exclusive bonus track on their
And then another one if you got your car washed at the car wash up the road.
So if you're in Europe, go get the Need You Now album, the iTunes with the bonus track Last Night Last.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, they're legit cuts. They got cut.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to do. So I'm happy.
But do get paid less for bonus tracks.
Well, they just don't sell as many.
Yeah.
Nobody's downloading
iTunes
them as
Europe
much as the hit
versus
single.
Everywhere in the world.
Right.
So there's just a smaller population that even had access to buy them.
Gotcha.
So it's a legit cut. It's out there. People paid for it, but just not as many as bought the whole record.
Right.
So therefore, it looks better on the bio than the bank statement. But it's like, that's out of my hands. I wrote a song. They loved it. They cut it. After that, I'm not in the room making the decisions on what goes in on the record.
I
did the best I could do. And so I'm happy to have it. Sounds great. They sound great singing it. Most people don't know that, but they do. You know, they've never heard it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to work on that, Brent.
I know. I mean,
you need to be in the room when they're deciding what songs
which
are on.
Which is why a lot of songwriters are starting to produce and do that kind of stuff, too.
See, which songs should I put on this album? Mine, and mine.
Let's pick the very best out of what we have that I wrote with you. Man, it's a tough business. So write with producers, too.
There you go. All right, listen, we need to take a quick break, but we are definitely coming back with more of hit songwriter Brent Baxter here on The Music Row Show.
Got hotter in this room. You walked in, made head spin. You look so good in the neon light. I drank you in with thirsty eyes. Long sip of your cool smile. Girl, I wanna reach right out, wrap you in my arms right now. Never let go, never let go.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's When Your Lips Are So Close. That was a big hit in Canada. Number one, as a matter of fact, for Gord Bramford. And that was co-written by our guest here this hour, Brent Baxter.
Also the owner and proprietor of Man vs.
Rome as well.
It was the CCMA single of the year.
Okay,
we were up for songwriters of the year, but we didn't win that one. But we did win the single of the year.
Perfect. Didn't want to.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You didn't want to be greedy.
I mean, the songwriter of the year. I actually probably would have gotten something to put on the mantle. Single of the year, I didn't. But
hey, you know,
really, like, who's going to complain? Not this guy.
Not this guy.
No. Does that face look like a complainer? No.
No. Look at that
big
smile.
Just happy to be here. Don't kick me back to Arkansas yet.
Let's talk about writing again. Writing like a pro. Thinking, and again, his ebook, Think Like a Pro Songwriter, is available for free by looking him up on giftfrombrent.com or manversusrow.com. Let's say that you're a songwriter and you have a great voice and you can do really rangy stuff. So you tend to write all this really rangy stuff because you like to go in and sing it and it's cool.
Right.
Does that help you as to get those cuts from, you know, your mainstream artists?
It depends on the artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in a pitch meeting one time at a label for an artist that shall remain nameless and actually dealless, I think, at the moment. But I played the song for the A&R person, and she's like, well, that's cool. Lyrically, I think it's right in that person's wheelhouse, but you can't sing it.
Yeah.
Because it was rangy, and this artist, their lane, and I wasn't thinking about that. I wasn't thinking enough like a pro when I cast the song. I want to pitch that because it fit lyrically, but it really, if I listened enough his records and thought in those terms, okay, that's way more rangy than anything this person
right,
does.
Right.
They know their lane, and they right. do that well.
They got their sweet spot.
Exactly. That's not in their sweet spot, so it was a wasted pitch.
Right.
So it does matter. I've had a buddy, too, that, you know, he writes his own stuff and has his own artist thing going, but, you know, he would play for publishers and be like, who's going to sing that? Because he can sing really rangy, really good voice. Like, most guys aren't going to be able to sing that, so
right.
bring me something I can use. So yeah. it matters. It's knowing, you know, okay, if I want to do Rascal Flatts, I can do this sort of melody. If I'm going to do Kenny Chesney, I can do this sort of thing. And even if you don't think about it so much on the front end, where you're just being wild and creative and writing a song for the sake of the song, mm-hmm. especially when it comes time to pitch it, you want to know who you're pitching to, what right. the target is, and you want to know where that target is and what fits and what doesn't. So, yeah, it matters.
Even if they can sing it, I've heard a hit writer, we had a conversation one time, and he was saying that a song got turned down by the artist, even though he loved the song and could sing it. He was thinking more, if I had to sing that every night out on tour, I'd blow my voice out. Yeah, I can do it in the studio, mm-hmm. but I got to be thinking about doing that song for the next, I don't know, however many years on the road, and probably not a good idea.
Yeah. Because I've heard someone talk about before, you know, what's going to... I was talking to an old publisher of mine, and he was saying, you know, you go to shows and think, what kind of song is going to make an artist feel cool standing up in front of 16, 20,000 people? What's going to make him feel cool to stand up there and sing? What's he going to want to sing and say to those people, his audience, night after night? So it's not really about what I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can do that from time to time. That's fine. But the songs I want to have commercially successful, I need to put myself in the artist's shoes. What do they want to say? What do they want to be up in front of those people? What is their messaging to their fans? Or you want to preach to their choir, something that they're going to say to their people night after night and feel good about themselves and look good up there singing about. And so thinking longer term, further out from myself, like I just want to write this song. And sometimes that works. You just write something from the heart and you're not thinking about mm-hmm. that stuff and it finds a home, and that's awesome. And there should always be room for that.
Right.
But other times, in general, you want to think a lot about, okay, I want to write this in a way that so-and-so is going to want to, Luke Bryan's going to want to stand up there and sing.
Okay, I'm going to use that example because I loved what you wrote about writing with the brand in mind. Mm-hmm. Eventually, do brands have to evolve? I mean, thinking of Luke Bryan, mm-hmm. There's not many backwoods tailgate party boys hanging around the bonfire in their late 40s. Those are called creepers at the party.
Right.
You know, well, we let him stay because it's his land. Just don't make eye contact.
Yeah.
You know, so what is there ways to think ahead that way and think, okay, maybe eventually he's going to want to sing about something else because it's going to seem silly for him to be doing this 20 years from now.
I mean, I think so. Or generally, like, even if you're not aiming specifically, like, at Luke, okay, what is he going to want to say 5 years from now? But I think as you're writing for kind of each next record, okay, what's another half step in some direction? I'm not sure. Unless you're in with that crowd and can talk to them and find out where they're wanting to go, mm-hmm. you're still guessing. Like, okay, is he going to start singing about this or that that's going on in his life? Maybe we can start going there a little bit to bring something a little different. Because, you know, for one thing, if you're just doing the tailgating party stuff and you're pitching it to Luke, why does he need yours?
Right.
You know, Dallas Davidson and him are good buddies. They can write it together, or Dallas can write it with, you know, Luke and Ben. And you know, they can...
They don't need Me Too songs
they
from
don't,
you.
Right. They have him on speed dial. They can call him up and say, hey, here's this thing we got working. What do you think about it? Mm-hmm. They can call him halfway through writing it and say, what do you think? I like it. Finish it. Okay. You know, the odds of me beating Dallas Davidson at his game are... It's not a worthwhile pursuit for me.
Right.
You know, because he's really good at that stuff. And he has a lot shorter pipeline to get his song.
He's got that access
artist.
We were talking
he's got
about
the
earlier.
Access. Right. So I want to bring something different. That's what like Monday Morning Church was. It was something different. Not everyone was writing that.
Right.
You know, with When Your Lips Are So Close, I wrote it with the artist and the producer. So we were able to bring that in, present the idea that we kind of started, and he dug it, and we worked on it, and with the artist and the producer there going, hey, is this working for you, where you want to go? And we tailored it for him to be a hit for him to sing to his people. So that was a different thing. Crickets was just writing it in, you know, just trying to write the best song we could, aiming at the market in general, even though knowing it's still pretty country for the market. But what's the best way to write this idea? This was going to be as strong and as marketable as we can make it. And then we, you know, we had ideas for types of artists.
Right.
And we started trying to get to those types of artists.
We need to take a break. But I do want to send a shout out to listener Austin, who's listening for the first time. Thanks for listening. We're glad you're here. We're going to be back with more of Brent Baxter on the Music Row Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Fields in the old spring mill, we laid a blanket down where the world was still, where nothing but a quarter moon lights up the dawn.
All right, just welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Crickets, so right, Joe Nichols, and that's co-written by our guest here right now, Brent Baxter. And those crickets are still waiting to get paid. I'm just saying.
There they are.
Well,
I love that
down.
Song.
Thank you.
It's fun. That was a song that I was a little bit upset with when I first heard it.
How so?
Because I had written that idea down and then turned on the radio the next day and I was like, oh, well, yours turned out way better than mine would have anyway. So it's a good song.
Thank you. And, you know, we've talked a lot about writing with artists and producers. That was just three songwriters writing a song in a room and then trying to pitch it. So...
But you had three, your team increased with two other writers in the room.
It did. And oddly enough, you know, they didn't have publishing deals. My publisher wasn't really that excited about it.
Really?
So they went and guitar vocaled it anyway, and we pitched it. And it was actually a pitch that I made that got it to
head
of the label, which is why one of the things we cover in the book, songwriters need to pitch their own songs. If I'd just been, you know, waiting for the publishing company to go pitch it, wouldn't have gotten it.
Did you put the cricket sound effect on the demo as well?
Yeah, it was two guitars, Kevin Denny singing his country backside off, and the cricket samples. And that was it. So it wasn't even a full demo. You know, maybe if we demoed it more full, found a way to really make it sound like a radio hit on the demo.
You could have really ruined it.
It could have ruined it.
Yeah.
Because they cut it pretty close to the, like, really acoustically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, more so like the demo. So, which is pretty cool.
I'll be darned.
So did a lot of things that, you know, not the standard way, I guess, you know.
Well, there isn't one way to do anything in this town. There really isn't. But there are certain things that are you want to be mindful of.
Right.
And one of those is industry pitch sheets, because we look at those all the time and see that, you know, Blake Shelton's looking for hit songs.
All right.
It never says Florida, Blake Shelton looking for songs that will never be a hit.
I keep waiting for
Album
Blake
filler.
Shelton's looking for crappy, moody songs that are 5 minutes long, like Southworth writes, and nothing. I can't find anything like that. But sometimes those pitch sheets are kind of diversionary tactics almost. Can you end up barking up the wrong tree chasing the...
Yeah, you can. I think they're helpful to an extent, but it's nothing like getting information right from people that really know. I mean, I have a buddy that was on a label and had been on the label for a while, and so I was writing with him and talking to him about how's the project looking, what are you cutting, what are they liking, where's your sound going, all that stuff. And then I get the the one or two of the tip sheets, and it says something completely different. It's like old information where they started off, but it's not where he was at the time.
Really?
So I'm like, sweet, throw everybody else off the scent, and we'll write what where you are now. So yeah, if you just listen to that, but it is helpful to give you an idea of some of who these new people are that haven't been on the radio yet. You can start doing research about them. You can ask about them. It gives you a starting point. Sometimes it's pretty accurate. Sometimes not as much.
What does looking for hit songs mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's just so generic. I mean, of course you're looking for a hit song. Everybody's looking for a hit song.
Looking for an excuse to drop him. Probably not.
Seriously, there are some. If someone says looking for hits, you're going to try to pitch him or her mostly up-tempo, right?
Yeah, I mean, up-tempo, positive, love, that's kind of the trifecta, that most people are looking for. To write a really good up-tempo positive that's not really silly or whatever, it's really hard to do. And it seems like at the end of the day, that's what they're really looking for. We need more up-tempo. And, looking at it, again, from the what does a singer want to bring to their show and what do they want to do, it's like, okay, because I've heard Brad Paisley talking about this before, or heard of him talking about this, like, okay, you work so hard to get people on their feet and singing and dancing with all these tempos, then you play a ballad, everyone sits down. Then I got to get them on their feet again. They want people on their feet having a good time, enjoying the show, so they're going to play mostly tempo. Radio likes mostly tempo, so the album's going to be what? Mostly tempo.
Right.
So that's the bigger bullseye you're trying to hit. So it makes sense. That's what they're looking for at the end of the day. They, a lot of times, lock down the ballads and stuff a little bit earlier in the process. So they just don't have as many slots for those.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to change the name of my publishing. I think maybe Only Ballads was a bad idea.
Yeah, Only Three-Quarter Time Ballads.
Only Waltz
Publishing. Only Waltz Ballads.
Well, man, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming back in and talking with us.
My pleasure.
And again, manversusrow.com.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget giftfrombrent.com to get Brent. That ebook.
Yes, B-R-E-N-T.
B-R-E-N-T. Do not go to B-R-E-T-T.
I'll be scared.
And we would have plugged your NSAI Advanced Song Camp, but it's already sold out.
It's already sold out.
Nothing
Thanks
to plug
me.
Here.
I know.
But congratulations.
There for a weekend and getting to know some good songwriters, and that'd be fun.
There you go.
Nice.
Well, thanks again. We got another great hour of the show coming up.
Yeah, Paul McDonald.
We got
in
Paul
here.
McDonald here with us. Great recording artist, great singer.
And he didn't leave. He sat here for the last 15 minutes, and he didn't just bolt out of here once he listened to us.
We got him bolted down to the chair now. He's tried to leave, but luckily intern Peyton's kind of tough. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.